Welcome to Switzerland in Sound, produced and presented by Bob Zanotti.
Hello and welcome to Switzerland in Sound. This is Bob Zanotti. The story of the English-speaking community of Lausanne goes back to the 1950s. The late Alan Rankin, a good Canadian friend of mine for many years, once told me the story of how he came to Lausanne and how the village was put on the map internationally by his backpacker meeting point called the Club Vagabond.
I was traveling around Europe in the summer of 1959, backpacking, youth hosteling, camping, looking for a place, and when I was in the Alps, I was looking for a place to ski the following winter. I looked in Austria, Switzerland, Italy, various places, and in driving through the road from Bern to Aigle in the Rhone Valley, I saw the town of Lausanne, the town of Diablerets. One was down, one was up. I looked on my map, dead-end road. I thought, well, I'll go up there anyway. I went up and liked it. I saw a lovely town up on a balcony, you would call it, of the mountains, looking out over the Mont Blanc range, a beautiful view, a beautiful exposure. I just thought that would be a nice place to have a look around at the Alps.
What was Lausanne like back then?
Lausanne at that point was in a very major decline. It had just gone through what we now know as the first era of its modern existence. The medical station of Lausanne, the tuberculosis station of the first half of the century, had collapsed with modern antibiotics and modern medicine.
Yeah, people used to come from all over Europe and the world because of the air, and there were clinics all over Lausanne at the time.
All over the world. It was an open air treatment, but it was because of the change in medicine that it couldn't survive any longer.
Yeah. Shot of penicillin, and that was the end of it.
Penicillin, mobile X-ray techniques to catch health plans to pay for it, and so these resorts went down very rapidly. And a small group in Lausanne decided something had to be done. This town had failed. You could buy a street of buildings. Everything was for sale. They didn't know what they were going to do.
It was almost like a ghost town, wasn't it?
The economy had collapsed. Yeah. And the people that were there were basically medical people, so they weren't equipped by their background to operate tourism. And I noticed an opportunity. I had been in the travel business professionally for quite some years at that time. I also saw the possibilities, but I didn't really have an idea at that time. A little bit later, traveling around, I started to realize how many young people, by young people I mean probably early 20s until 30. At that time, the very young student-type people weren't traveling. The Americans' youth weren't traveling here. They were mostly Commonwealth, Australians, South Africans, British, Canadians, and of course Europeans. The youth hostels were the only organization that was equipped to handle them, but they were designed for younger people in an earlier era. Yet that's where the people congregated. Later, I saw an opportunity in developing a sort of a youth hostel, a cross between a youth hostel and a student hotel.
I have to interrupt you here, Alan, because we have to go back in the history of what we now call tourism. We're talking about the post-war era. And there was a differentiation. I remember as a student myself, there was a very proud differentiation made between the so-called traveler and the tourist. You look down your nose at the tourists. You know, these were people who didn't know really where they were going, didn't speak any languages, couldn't care less. It was the people spending money just to say, I've been in a certain place, I ate a pizza in Naples and went home again. But you, and I know because I've known you for so many years, you were a traveler from the beginning. This, when we start talking about the Club Vagabond and your original ideas, you mentioned tourism. I wanted to qualify that because it was more what we would call, looking back, catering to the traveler, the serious traveler, or let's call it the serious tourist, someone who wanted more than just a cheap thrill for a short time. These are the people you were interested in cultivating and catering to, right?
Yes, the traveler. I think in retrospect the word is community. That in traveling around, I slowly discovered a community, a fraternity of travelers wherever I went. And in time, I thought it would be interesting to have places where they could gather and stop. When you're traveling for a long period of time, you simply wear down after a while. A couple of months is a standard period. You burn out. You've absorbed and seen a great deal that's new. It's hard work. And you've just got to stop and reflect, talk to people who are doing the same thing, take it all in. It also takes a grapevine. And on the grapevine, you learn where to go, where to eat, where to stop, where to sleep, where to meet people, and where to turn off for a while. Having been in the travel business, I thought, this is an opportunity that would be very, very interesting to open a place. Because I was a skier, I combined it with my idea of going to ski somewhere for the winter. And I thought, why not have a place where you can ski in the winter and have travelers in the summer? There might actually be a lot of fun in running such a place. In Spain, I met a then Rhodesian chap, Ken Tate, who, a bit older than me, but was also looking for something to do, a new stage of his life, liked the idea, so we decided to go about it seriously, and we started to look for places. We came back up, we looked around the Alps, settled on Switzerland, and I remembered Lausanne. So I came back, had a look, liked it, and we started negotiating for property. So we were welcomed. They didn't really have much of an English-speaking presence. There weren't many people who actually spoke English in town. But we came in, they liked the idea of what we were doing. We got a lot of help from the founding fathers of the station. And we became founding fathers ourselves.
And of course, times have changed too. Lausanne is much more cosmopolitan than it was in the beginning. Your efforts originally and those of other people over the years have made it a very international place, a very international climate.
We brought to Lausanne an English-speaking clientele. At the same time as we were looking around, an organization or some people were looking around to start an American school. And that was the beginning of schools in Lausanne. And that grew and grew and grew until we were a major force in advertising Lausanne and a significant number of bed nights in the total.
When did the rest of the English-speaking community start arriving? I mean, you had a lot of transient visitors, tourists who were coming up or travelers to spend a few days or a few weeks with you and disappear again. But the actual permanent resident community in Lausanne grew over the years. How did this develop?
We only contributed in a small way to that at first, in that we were a small number of people managing our business, and we had a small staff that would stay on for a season, a year, 2 years. Right behind us came the American school. With the establishment of a school, we had 20 or 30 American teachers and administrators. They, of course, were staying in Lausanne. Then the schools brought parents, and parents would stay on, and it grew into a community. Well, then the Vagabond became very big in the mid-60s, late-60s, and throughout the 70s and early 80s. But in that early growth, we brought this tremendous number of new English-speaking people into Lausanne.
You're talking about an institution, the Club Vagabond. It made it into the publications. The travelers, the tourists knew about it. It brought people up here. And then it started to go downhill. I can't think of an elegant or diplomatic way to put it. It sort of fizzled out. What happened? What went wrong?
It started at exactly the same time as the youth travel boom of the 1960s. And we used the student travel network around the world as one of our advertising mediums. That boom of travelers through Europe, in retrospect, lasted until the early 1970s. The oil crisis of 1973 changed so many things. One of the most important being exchange rates. Switzerland went from being a middle-priced country for a young traveler to an expensive country. And a young person can't travel today the way a young person could then, unless he's quite wealthy. Anyway, there was a decline through the 70s, and by the 80s, the whole environment that the young people were in precluded them traveling the way we could back in those days. They simply couldn't take off from a job and hope to go back a year, two, 3 years later and pick up that job again. The number of clients went down, and we simply couldn't go on the same way as we had in the past. We're going to have to go in a totally new direction. That didn't really interest me, so I left at that time.
What keeps bringing you back after all these years?
I used the word community before. The Vagabond was a community of travelers from all over the world. Lausanne was very good to that community, was very good to me. I have developed my local friends, and after 40 years, I feel more a part of that community than any other one.
But what about the future? How do you see the future of this village? And certainly the English-speaking aspect of it.
The first half of the century was a medical economy. Most of the second half has been a tourism economy. Along with the tourism developed some very large schools. These schools are going on, and I think the schools are the basis of the next wave for Laysan, and that it'll be very important to build upon those if they're ever going to move back up towards the bed night figures they need to support the infrastructure they've got there.
The late Alan Rankin, one of the early English-speaking pioneers of Laysan. As Alan mentioned, education also played a major role in creating the international flavor of the village, and it was education that helped provide an economic foundation for Laysan. Dr. Stephen Ott, a German-Swiss in this French-speaking part of Switzerland, is the director of Laysan's American School. He looks back to the school's beginning.
When the school was formed in 1960 and opened its doors in 61, you might recall that in those days we were talking about the encirclement of the former Soviet Union. American bases were being built all around the Soviet Union, and in many of these bases they had high school age kids who were unable to go to a local high school because of language or system. There was no American high school available, and so there was a need to create a boarding high school, and my father, who at that time was with the U.S. Air Force, was approached to open up this high school here in the mountaintop, and we call it our Magic Mountain here.
What is the situation today? Who are the students?
Well, the first 79 students were primarily military kids. Today, we have approximately one-third who are American passport holders. When I say American passport holders, that does not necessarily mean they're culturally Americans, because America is such a diverse country.
They maybe grew up here or in another European country.
Most of the Americans would be expat Americans from State Department, oil companies, defense-oriented companies, and multinationals located anywhere in the world. We have kids here whose parents might come from Oklahoma and work in Saudi Arabia. Others who come from California and work for Mobil Oil Company in Sakhalin Island north of Japan. We have kids from Sumatra, from South China, from Vietnam, all over the world who are expats. That means they live outside of their own home country, and that's approximately one-third. The other two-thirds are made up of roughly two major groups. We have an increasing number of rather adventurous Americans coming directly from the U.S. to us. America is discovering that there is a world outside of the U.S., which I think is a very positive development. They are seeing that kids can learn a lot and become more complete people by having an international experience. And then we have a large number of students from well over 50 countries in the world. They range from Kazakhstan to Russia to China to Macedonia and Albania, South America. Every continent is represented except for Antarctica.
Where does your faculty come from now here at the American School?
The American School hires most of its faculty from the United States. We do have some Europeans, especially in the languages. We have some English people here. But because we follow the American system, we need people who are experienced within the American system itself as a background. So we recruit at various teacher recruitment fairs, and they're mostly Americans.
A very important point here. This is an American-style classical high school education you're offering here. But are you trying to Americanize these students?
Oh, I'm happy you asked this question. One of our major points of the school philosophy is international understanding. Nationalism, ethnicity, and all of those things are bringing up their ugly heads again. I think it's very important that kids understand each other and learn from each other in a multicultural setting. But that does not mean that we want to make Americans out of them. Rather, we'd like to have people understand that the element of being a human being brings us closer to each other, and that there are more things that unite us rather than trying to make us similar, but that unite us just by being fellow travelers on this planet. We hope that kids come with very strong traditions of their own culture. In a sense, we're really only American in the type of system that the school follows, rather than in the type of student who comes here or the attitudes that students have when they leave.
Let's turn finally to you yourself, Dr. Ott. You are German-Swiss. You wouldn't notice it by listening to you. And here you are in Lausanne, in French-speaking Switzerland, speaking native American English. First of all, let us know the secret. Why is your English so good?
Well, actually, I'm Swiss, but I'm also U.S. I'm a dual national. I was born in the States, and I spent the first 4 years in the U.S., and then I came to Switzerland. Yes, I find that what you're saying is correct. It's, why should one live in the French part of Switzerland when one is maybe American and German-Swiss? Well, it's not only the school. I think the quality of life in Lausanne is one of very, very wonderful quality of life. We are close to everything, and yet we're in a safe haven, a small town, a town which is very friendly, which is very open, where we know people, where we can leave our front door unlocked. I think that's we enjoy being here. It's a great place. Besides, the challenge of the school fulfills our life so completely, and when I talk about we, it's my wife and myself, so completely, so that I can say the world comes to us. Just imagine, we're sitting on top of this mountain in one of the most beautiful areas of Switzerland, and we have visitors from Kyrgyzstan. I didn't know where that was a few years back. And we have a family coming in from Albania who will tell us about what's happening in that area of the world. And we have Brazilians who tell us about what's happening. The world comes to us, and we can experience the best of all. And that's why I think we love being right where we are.
Stephen Ott, director of the American School of Lausanne. Helping to complete the Anglo-Saxon flavor of Lausanne is the presence of a North American-style children's summer camp. It's called Village Camps, the idea of two other English-speaking Lausanne pioneers, Roger Ratner and Ed Ivy. Roger got there first.
I was actually working, believe it or not, as an accountant at IBM back in 1965, and a colleague of mine came up to me and said, would you mind doing me a favor and going for an interview? There's this Swiss company that wants to recruit, and I'd like to get myself back over there. My wife's English, and I want to get on the continent, and this looks like a wonderful opportunity, but I'd really like your opinion on this company. I said, Don, I still remember his name. I said, sounds good, I'll do it. And so I went down there, and long story, to cut it very short, is that I got offered the job. He didn't, and I went over to Switzerland, with his blessing, by the way. I mean, he didn't hurt me too badly. And I wound up in Switzerland working for a company called Investors Overseas Services. And then when it folded, I went back to my camp experience, where I grew up in camps from the age of five, the American camp experience, and found a fellow by the name of Bob McCausland, who was one of the pioneers in Lausanne. He's been there even much longer than I was. And he was a camper. He had he was the director of a camp in Lausanne, and I think they had a place in Denmark, too, if I'm not mistaken. And eventually was affiliated with Steve's American school right at the beginning. With
Stephen Ott.
Yep. Yeah, with his father. And they were the pioneers of that school. So Bob and I linked up. He had some camp experience. I had the marketing experience and loved kids. And we began in the campus in 1972.
Well, Ed Ivy, we've heard at least the essentials of Roger Ratner's story. You came, I think, about a year later onto the scene. You're from Oklahoma, out in the great American West, and that's even a farther distance to Lausanne than New York.
I mean, than New York.
Right. What's your story?
I came out because to teach English. I had been in the military for 4 years. And lo and behold, I was in Vietnam in 1969 and got interested in French. Went back to university, finished my degree in French, and then had an opportunity through the Institute of International Education to go to France to teach English in a French public school. And looking for something to do that summer of 73 that was, met Roger and became a counselor that summer at camp. here we still are.
Funny enough, Bob's original camp site was in Lausanne.
Bob McCausland.
Bob McCausland. Yeah. Our original site was not. It was in Geneva. Mm-hmm. We located, the international school, which we still use to this day.
Well, that was logical, really. I mean, Geneva is the international community. It seems like a logical start.
It was very logical for what we developed, which was a day camp in that community, and a very successful one almost from the first day. It was several years later that we actually moved the camp back up to Lausanne and came back to Bob's basic roots, which we hadn't anticipated when we first started.
Well, I guess, I could ask you why, but I can imagine that it was the nature, the beauty of the place. I mean, this great air, I mean, this wonderful, pure nature up there. I mean, that was very attractive, I can imagine, for kids who were in an urban setting.
Absolutely. It definitely was that. And it was just such an accommodating place. The village itself, the people were very friendly, very supportive. With everything working in our favor, it was very hard to resist. And, of course, Bob was actually living there. Mm-hmm. So the logistics of nasty stuff was all taken care of. And we had wonderful relationships with the community.
No bureaucracy, no hassle?
No, it was amazingly supportive.
72 was certainly the first summer that we operated. And as I said, I joined in 73, the summer of 73, and then did we had a winter camp. Well, in fact, you did a winter camp before, didn't you?
Yeah,
you
did we did a winter camp up at the Vagabond, up in Allen's old building.
Well, the old Vagabond,
next door to it.
All the ski bums up there. Huh?
That's right. They were our counselors at the beginning. They were great.
Those were days. We were talking to that about...
today we call that synergies, right?
That's right. But that's where we... and that's how we've developed as well. I mean, Switzerland is an obvious place to do winter programs. We've got everything we need for the kids. We have always, we village camps, have always focused on international schools around the world. And therefore, we've been able to bring them into Lausanne. We can bring them in for skiing because all international schools, they always want to ski in the wintertime. We've brought them in for outdoor education programs. We bring them in for the summer camps as well. So for us, Lausanne is an ideal spot.
It's also incredibly well-equipped. For me, it's by far the best summer station and out-of-winter-season station in the country. They've got two sports centers. They've got permanent ice skating throughout the year, horse riding, all the ball sports because of the gym, and they're not that far from summer skiing in Diablerey. In any given camp, we'd have 40, 50 nationalities. And in the States, you had one. And so right away, it set a different tone. But a lot of it, I think, at the beginning, was the recreational space that we provided and the supervision. But more important, that we've taken on much more dramatically over the past 10 or 15 years, was the educational stress that we put on it now. Our motto is education through recreation. Mm-hmm. And that tells an awful lot about us, and that's what differentiates village camps from the many, many, many camps around that just provide a summer vacation. We're much more on vacation.
It's not passive so much, it's an active vacation.
It's an active learning experience, absolutely.
Well, so far on our report about the English-speaking community of Lausanne in Canton Vaud above the Lake of Geneva in western Switzerland, we've talked quite a bit about the pioneers of the past, bringing it up to the present, but remembering that, for example, village camps were started years ago, decades ago. It's still going strong. But what about today in this village of Lausanne? What about the English language community of this village today? And what about its future? Well, I have just the man to answer that question, an old friend I've known for many, many years. His name is Peter Klein. As you will hear, Peter has an American background. Peter, what's your story? Where do you come from, and how did you find your way to Lausanne?
Well, my goodness, finding my way to Lausanne was pretty easy. It was predestined since my mother is from Lausanne. I was born and raised in Rochester, New York, came over to Switzerland when I was 18, continued my studies secondary and tertiary schooling, and then university schooling, and did the same thing that most Lausanne people do, traveled, came back to Lausanne, traveled some more, came back to Lausanne, and then stayed. The fact is that Lausanne is really, it's not a picture-perfect place, it's a video-perfect place. It's a movie. Nothing stays the same in Lausanne, except that once you've been here, difficult to ever forget it, and it's difficult to leave. I cannot complain about one moment Not one moment can I say that Lezan has let me down. This has been a great place to be.
Nearly 40 years in Lezan. How have you been feeding yourself there? What kind of work have you been doing?
I have had various occupations with multinational companies. I've been a teacher. I've been a tourist guide. I have had my own business here in Lezan in that I tried to start a radio school with a radio station. We broadcast here for 3 years. And currently I am teaching communications at the European University in Montreux.
Well, let's look back now again to the theme of this feature report, the English-speaking community of Lezan. Peter, obviously you're still there, but what's left of it beside you?
Oh, you'd be surprised. You don't really have to turn over too many rocks to find those fossils. There are quite a few people that have stayed on, and they are living the life here in the mountains. We have a good number of people that are now working in the institutions, that the academic institutions, that are a permanent fixture here in Lezan. Now, actually, life in Lezan without the schools would not exist. Tourism in itself has changed. It is no longer the family tourist station where people come to ski, stay for a week or two. Yeah, there's a bit of that, but there's much more of the long-term schooling person. They come for high school, they stay on for university, and then sometimes stay on, period. The English-speaking community is thriving. There's always something going on. There's parties, there's get-togethers, there's actually a happy hour every Friday at a certain restaurant, at a certain hotel, and that's keeping us all together.
Well, I have been to Lezan many times, and I'm always impressed by the beauty of the village, the wide openness of it. It's like a plateau, basically, but it has mountains. There's a restaurant on top of the mountain, a rotating one, I think, even. You have sports. There are lots of sporting possibilities.
Well, I think that's the future of Lezan's tourism, actually. If the schools one day disappear, Lezan has wonderful opportunities for any person that is involved with practically any sport. I think the only thing you can't do in Lezan is kayaking, but you can parapop, paraglide, ski touring, you can sled, you can motoneige, you can do everything up here, summer and winter.
And here I can't forget to mention that the eminent, the world-famous Dougal Haston, the British alpinist, lived in Lezan.
Yes, thanks, Bob, for saying that. Dougal was a prime mover in the International School of Mountaineering. There are a few people left that are involved with that organization. They are still in Lezan, and they are still climbing, actually. Dougal brought quite a few big names to Lezan. And from that, the School of Mountaineering was attached to or involved with the Club Vagabond. Vagabond Club was basically the hub of it all.
And those mountains are still there.
Oh, the mountains are still here. Absolutely. They won't leave for a while.
Peter, just in summation, what would you say would attract people to Lezan today?
It's a health spot. This is a beautiful area, as you mentioned before. It's south-facing. The snow is still pretty good up until about, I don't know, mid-April. And we have a number of hotels that will fit just about any budget.
What about that magic word, wellness?
The wellness word is quite well used here as well. We have clinics that are specializing in holistic medicines, and we also have, well, of course, the schools. This is a year-round operation. Lezan is not just a tourist spot anymore. It is it really is focusing on a whole different palette of a variety of things that you can do here. But I still think that sports, wellness, it's a great spot to come and center yourself. It's a beautiful, beautiful area, great energy, but we have great sun, and we have great air, and the water is just superb.
Is that sense of community still alive, that feeling this is a great place to live?
Oh, absolutely. I think so.
My old friend Peter Klein from Lezan, a resident of many, many years, with himself a great deal of experience and a lot to tell about his adopted home, Lezan, nestled in the mountains of Canton Vaud above the Lake of Geneva. Thank you, Peter, so much indeed for putting the cap on our report about the English-speaking community of Lezan. For Switzerland and Sound, this is Bob Zanotti.
If you want more information about Switzerland in Sound, check them out online at www.switzerlandinsound.com.
Finally Friday with Neil Hendrickson.